This is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First radio show. Today we have Dr. Roberto Tostado on first with WTF is Wrong with Our Health. And in the second show, we have Dr. Sanam Hafiz, and she is talking about addiction. But first, here's Alan with the Health First news.
Girls and young women who use diet pills and laxatives to control their weight are at increased risk for eating disorders, a new study finds. Researchers analyzed data from more than 10,000 girls and women aged 14 to 36 from 2001 to 2016. Among those who initially did not have an eating disorder, 1.8% of those who used diet pills in the past year said they received their first eating disorder diagnosis over the next 1 to 3 years, compared to 1% of those who did not use diet pills. The researchers also found that 4.2% of those who used laxatives for weight control were subsequently diagnosed with their first eating disorder, compared to 0.8% of those who did not use laxatives for weight control. The study was published online November 21st in the American Journal of Public Health. 2 in 3 survivors of childhood sexual abuse have good mental health, but a new study suggests that social isolation, chronic pain, substance abuse, and depression can hinder recovery. Researchers looked at 651 Canadian survivors to identify factors associated with what the researchers call complete mental health. Lead author Esme Fuller-Thompson said 2/3 of the childhood sexual abuse survivors in the sample met the criteria for complete mental health, defined as being happy or satisfied with life most days in the past month, having high levels of social and psychological well-being in the past month, and being free of mental illness, suicidal thoughts, and substance dependence in the past year. She is director of the Institute for Life Course and Aging at the University of Toronto. The study was published November 19th online in the journal Social Psychiatry and Psychiatric Epidemiology. 4 of 5 older children and teens around the world don't get the recommended amount of physical activity, a new study says. Researchers analyzed data gathered between 2001 and 2016 from 1.6 million students aged 11 to 17 in 146 countries. They found that 81% of them did not meet World Health Organization's recommendations for an hour of moderate to vigorous physical activity every year. Girls were less active than boys in all but 4 countries: Tonga, Samoa, Afghanistan, and Zambia. In nearly 1/3 of countries, girls were more than 10 percentage points less likely to meet the WHO recommendations. The study was published November 21st in The Lancet Child and Adolescent Health Journal. The risk of newborn death in late-term pregnancies may be lower if labor is induced rather than taking a wait-and-see approach, a new study suggests. The researchers were led by Ulla Britt Wennerholm, an associate professor in obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Gothenburg's Sahlgrenska Academy in Sweden. They looked at more than 2,700 Swedish women with an average age of 31 with an uncomplicated single pregnancy. They were randomly assigned to induced labor at 41 weeks or wait and see expectant management until induced labor at 42 weeks if necessary. Rates of death and complications such as breathing problems, pneumonia, and sepsis were not statistically different between the two groups, 2.4% in the induced labor group and 2.2% in the wait and see group. The study was published recently in the journal BMJ.
Author and Dr. Robert Tostado is here with his book, WTF is Wrong with Our Health, and this is a pre-recorded tape. So you've really been busy getting people well, Roberto.
Yes, and thank you for having me. Yes, this is my mission, to help people understand that they could heal themselves through their food choices on a daily basis, and it doesn't have to be running to the doctor's office. Is my true belief is that health begins in the kitchen, not in the clinic.
And why did you leave family practice to go into regenerative medicine?
Well, that really was my whole transformation and turning point in my life, where going to medical school, we didn't learn nutrition, and we had 2 years of pharmacology, which tells you basically the foundation of our medical system. And so going through the rigors of residency, we get formally educated in more pharmaceutical medicine. And then doing 10 years of traditional medicine and family practice at an HMO, I realized over time that my medical degree, MD, really stood for managed disease. And it's not so much that I'm anti-doctor or anti-medicine, but the reality is that we do manage disease. And so if someone has diabetes, for example, you know, we're going to give them the necessary medication and then probably give them something for cholesterol and probably give them something for blood pressure and so on and so forth for the rest of their life. And so I thought I was a really good doctor doing all these things until I realized, wait a minute, all I'm doing is giving people more and more and more medication year after year after year after year. I thought I was going to be healing people. And so I took a step back from this because I truly had this crisis with my conscience. And I thought, I need to do something differently because I don't feel like I'm healing people. I'm just putting them on more and more drugs. And so this is when I realized not learning nutrition in medical school was the massive gap that was in our education, a big blind spot, so to speak. And this is why I decided to then pursue nutrition and help people reverse their disease, including things like obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, basically all the modern day diseases that are metabolic diseases. And that's what I do now day to day, is help people understand through food, they can start eliminating medication and start living the lifestyle that they want to. It's not a specific diet, because I'm against diets. It's really about choosing the foods that are cross-cultural, that you are comfortable with, but that heal the body, versus processed foods that are truly causing all the modern-day diseases of today because they're filled with sugars and pesticides and herbicides. And so many people consume these things daily, not realizing that they're poisoning their bodies. And so that's the reason I left traditional medicine.
Okay.
Because in traditional medicine, yeah, we manage disease.
And how would you describe regenerative medicine?
So regenerative medicine is the simple concept of not accepting degeneration, breakdown, that getting old means being sick. But that's not even the case anymore. I'm seeing young people in their 30s and their 40s, or even children in, you know, 10, 11 years of age that have obesity and diabetes. So regenerative medicine is to help people understand this whole concept of, with a basis of nutrition, that you can help stop degeneration in your body at whatever age, reverse disease, and live a life with energy and happiness. So, so it includes nutrition. It includes detoxification, cleaning up the liver with, you know, whole food and whole food supplements. It could include stem cell therapies, getting stem cells either from your own fat cells or from cord blood for inflammation and any inflammatory disease, really, arthritis, diabetes, to help reverse these diseases. So it's really using a lot of natural concepts to help the body heal and to help reverse disease.
And would you consider yourself a rebel now?
Well, it's kind of a funny story, but as I was going through my book process, which took 6 years, and I found this fantastic editor, when he read my manuscript, he said, "You're a rebel." And I started laughing, and I said, "Well, you know, if healing people and suggesting broccoli instead of giving this other medication yet again is being a rebel, I'll accept it, because it's all being a rebel with a good cause." And so I guess I am a rebel. Considering
that's a good thing. How do the MDs you used to work with feel about your new process? Are they interested?
There's some resistance, frankly, because, you know, it's really about your ego, and you get taught for all these years a certain way, and then basically what I'm saying is, well, we were taught a way, and that way is not necessarily the right way. And sometimes you do need surgery. Sometimes you do need an antibiotic or insulin. I understand that. But we don't need 80% of our population in America being obese, and it's becoming global. So obviously something's broken, and we don't just give medications over and over again. So these colleagues of mine are saying, "I think you're onto something, but I don't understand it." And I said, "I understand, because at one point I was ignorant also. I didn't understand nutrition because we're not taught this. I didn't understand detoxification or stem cells." So the whole point is, in a sense, I had to go back to school after school and understand these concepts to apply them to my patients as I applied them to myself, because I had weight issues. I had cholesterol issues when I was in traditional medicine. But when I started eating things that I enjoyed, from the fruits and the vegetables and the beans and the proteins that I enjoy, I started realizing that my body was getting healed without any particular diet restriction or any kind of exercise program. It was very natural. And that's the point I want to really make to any audience that I talk to or through my book, is that you incorporate a lifestyle based on the whole foods that you eat. It's not a specific diet. You don't have to be on Atkins or Paleolithic or vegetarian necessarily. Those do work. But my point is, make it so that it's natural to you, and have the occasional donut, have the occasional beer, so it feels natural and not robotic. And so in the book, I impress upon this point in very specific details of the foods that you can incorporate and the spices and the herbs that are anti-inflammatory, because in essence, all diseases are inflammatory. And too many people eat pro-inflammatory foods, whether that be all the vegetable oils or things like too much beef or too much chicken or too much pork, which all cause inflammation. Not enough people eat fish, which are anti-inflammatory, or things like almonds and walnuts and olive oil, which are anti-inflammatory. So I talk about all this in the book so that people could look at it as a practical guide to healing their bodies in a very practical, sensible way without thinking they have to go on a crazy program, because they don't.
And where do the beer and donuts come in then?
Well, the whole donut notion is because I used to be a donutaholic. That's when I had my weight issues. Mm-hmm. And so, and my point is everybody's a carboholic until proven otherwise. And carboholic meaning like a sugaraholic, because sugar is a very powerful chemical. You call it an addiction, because sugar is put in so many processed foods, beverages, fast foods. Sugar is very addicting in the brain. So people will always go to these foods thinking that it's giving them energy. But the reality is it's a cheap form of fuel, which is very harmful to the body. Because sugar feeds cancer cells, sugar causes obesity, and the point is that it's very pro-inflammatory, and because people are so addicted to foods with sugars, whether it be bread or pastas or ramen or desserts, whatever the case might be, in particular energy drinks, you continue in this vicious cycle of always consuming these sugar-based foods. And what I'm telling people is learn to incorporate more whole foods that you enjoy. The fruits that you like, the vegetables that you hate the least, because I meet so many people that don't like vegetables. Mm-hmm. I ask them, well, the ones you hate the least are the ones you should eat, and the proteins that you want to. And then this way, they realize that they are tailoring their own lifestyle, how they enjoy, versus being forced fed, you know, these particular programs.
Absolutely. Roberto, we're going to have to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about healthy diets for increasing your health using food for medicine.